And in the spring of 1862, the real fighting started kicking in. 77th was part of what was known as the Army of the Potomac, meaning the Potomac River, tens of thousands strong. And their goal was to capture Richmond. But a West Point graduate and former West Point superintendent by the name of Robert E. Lee, he'd have something to say about that.
This is the Historians Podcast, and I'm Bob Cudmore. We welcome Chris Carolla to the program. He's joined us a number of times, and he's going to talk about a topic from the Civil War, one of the volunteer regiments. In fact, it's the 77th volunteer regiment that came from New York State, which was based in Saratoga County and some other neighboring counties. And to throw in our history mystery at the beginning, why do you suppose they used the numbers 77 for the infantry regiment that was raised in the Saratoga area? Was it because that was the number of people that originally signed up, was 77? Was it because there were 77 communities in the three-county area that would send soldiers to the war through this regiment? Well, no. Chris, why did they name it the 77th?
Well, Bob, during the Civil War, the practice in the northern states was when these regiments were formed, they designated the regiment number in chronological order that they applied to have these regiments made part of the Union Army. So in New York State at the time, they had 44 regiments that were already been entered into the Union Army or were in the process. And when the Saratoga County, when the 77th applied their regiment for their regiment, they made a special request to the governor of New York State. They wanted to be known as the 77th, not the 45th, which was the next number available. And they wanted to be the 77th in honor of the battles of Saratoga, fought during the Revolution, which were fought in September and October of 1777. And the governor signed off on that. From what I can tell, that's fairly unique, at least in New York State, where they honored a request for a special number. So that was pretty distinctive for these guys to be the 77th, and they were proud of being from, you know, Saratoga County.
Let me ask a bit about you, Chris Carolla. You, for many years, worked for the Associated Press. Give us a little thumbnail sketch of your interest in journalism and history.
Yeah, Bob, I worked for the Associated Press for a total of 34 years, the last 31 in Albany, as a reporter based out of the AP's office in the Times Union building. And in addition to the daily duties of a typical AP reporter working in a bureau, you know, covering the news of the day, I would squeeze in, you know, occasional history-related stories because our part of the country here, especially upstate, is just so rich in history, you know, going back to colonial times. So, and personally, I'd always been interested in history, even as a kid growing up in Mechanicville, my hometown. So one of my interests was the Civil War. Recently, the Saratoga Springs Public Library, earlier this year, actually asked me to do a presentation, a talk on the 77th Regiment as part of their Brown Bag Luncheon series that they do every month on Thursdays in conjunction with the Saratoga Springs Visitors and Heritage Center. And I said, sure. I was born and raised in Mechanicville. I've lived in Saratoga Springs for the last 35 years or more. And I knew about the 77th history a little bit in the Civil War. So in preparation for this talk I was going to give the week of Veterans Day, I had to do a deeper dive into the history of this regiment, where they fought, and all those great things, and learned a lot about it, a lot about this outfit that wound up fighting in some of the biggest and bloodiest campaigns of the Civil War.
I've been more familiar with the 115th Regiment, which was raised in the Mohawk Valley. It did include some soldiers from Saratoga County, but I think primarily they were from Montgomery and Fulton and maybe some other counties to the west. And they were called the Ironhearted Regiment. And I remember at one point talking with my two sources for 115th are David Brooks, the historian, over to Schoharie Crossing, and a private historian named Mark Silo, and he said one of the reasons people were interested in the 115th is they didn't fight in the usual battles, as apparently the 77th did. They lost a lot of soldiers, but their campaign was very messed up at the very beginning. They ended up being placed under house arrest and all that. But they did their battling quite a bit in Florida, which was an effort by the Union, which really didn't get anywhere. But the 77th, you describe how the soldiers gathered, and they went to New York City by train, where it sounds like they were almost treated like arriving royalty down in New York City.
Yeah, that's a good point, Bob. The 77th, yeah, and you mentioned the 115th being raised partly in Saratoga County. The 77th was mostly men from Saratoga County, the various towns and villages, but also from Essex County in the Adirondacks and Fulton County out in the Mohawk Valley. And the guys mustered in. They were accepted into the Union Army in November 1861, a few months after the war started. Typically, regiments, Union Army regiments, had anywhere from 800 to 1,000 when they formed. And there was about almost 800 in the 77th when they headed south to New York City en route to Washington, D.C. And while they were in New York City in December 1861, there was a group of former Saratoga Springs residents who formed the group, raised some money, and presented the 77th with a regimental flag, specially designed for the 77th. And the design on the regimental flag depicted a famous painting of British General Burgoyne surrendering to American General Gates after the battles of Saratoga. And this was depicted on a large flag. And this was a common practice during the Civil War, where these special especially designed regimental flags would be presented to various units by citizens. Mm-hmm. Each regiment was required to have a national flag, the United States flag in the Union Army, and a regimental flag, along with other flags like flank markers that were used on the flanks to designate the end of a line of men. But yeah, that was a specially designed flag given to the 77th, and it was actually made by Tiffany & Company. That flag, that flag is still in the possession of the New York State Military Museum, which has something like 2,000 battle flags dating back to the War of 1812 in its collection. Out of that 2,000, more than half of them, something like 1,100 or 1,200, are battle flags from the Civil War carried by New York State units. And it's the largest such collection in America. And the 77th flag, and you can go to the New York State Military's Museum's website and see a lot of these flags, including the 77th regimental flags and a few of the other ones they carried in battle.
The 115th, when they went to war, they stopped in New York City and that things were fine, but their main point of departure was Baltimore, and they were very unpopular there because there was a lot of secessionist sentiment in Baltimore, even though that state stayed within the Union. But with the 77th, after New York City, I believe you said that, like many northern regiments or the volunteer regiments, they encamped around Washington, D.C., in a sense, waiting for the war to start?
The 77th arrived in Washington, D.C. in December 1861. And typically back then, armies did not fight during the winter. They went into what there was known as winter quarters, although there were Civil War battles fought in December. But typically January, February, and into March, they regrouped and trained and stocked up their supplies and ammunition and that type of thing. So the 77th was bivouacked in the District of Columbia in an area that's now a park, a national park. And they were basically spent that time training, waiting for the spring campaign to start in 1862, which it did in March of 1862. The Union Army started marching south into Virginia, into eastern Virginia. And in the spring of 1862, the real fighting started kicking in. The 77th was part of what was known as the Army of the Potomac, meaning the Potomac River, tens of thousands strong. And their goal was to capture Richmond, but a former West Point a West Point graduate and former West Point superintendent by the name of Robert E. Lee, he'd have something to say about that. And that started
that. But before we leave the upstate, I was really impressed with some of the remarks that you have used, quotes from raising the regiment. You know, it's really a patriotic language saying they're taking our, they want to take our capital, they want to take over our country. It sounded, you know, it sounded like it would be the kind of thing that would make you want to stand up and cheer or stand up and fight.
Yeah, when they raised these regiments in New York, you know, the language was like they're tearing apart our union. They're rebels down south. You know, this is our legitimate government, and they need to be stopped. Let's head south. And one of the guys that led that effort for the 77th was a lawyer named James McKean, who actually got elected to Congress in 1858. And he's the one that led the effort to raise the 77th in 1861. And he was a colonel in the regiment. And he was part of a group of a core group of young officers from Saratoga County who would all go off and fight together. And some of them wouldn't survive it. McKean himself fought in several early battles. But he got sick, like a lot of these guys did, and sick to the point where he was discharged in 1863. And he was highly regarded, like a lot of these officers. And you see letters written home or letters shared with the local newspapers on how much the soldiers loved their officers, because these officers, they led from the front. You know, if their men went hungry, they went hungry. If their men slept out in the rain, they slept out in the rain. And McKean was one such officer.
At the beginning, that's just maybe an opinion of mine or what I seem to glean from history, that in the beginning, the North seemed to have the idea that this was going to be over soon. You know, that this was some kind of insurrection, like the Whiskey Rebellion of the late 1700s, and we'll send the troops, and it'll be over. But it wasn't over.
No, and that was the attitude on both sides, actually. They thought, we can whip them, and it'll be over soon. And that's why when after Fort Sumner was fired on by secessionists in South Carolina in April 1862, President Lincoln put out the call for 75,000 volunteers in the North. Well, back then, all the states had militias. So the first ones to heed the call were these state militias who enlisted for 3 months, three-month duty stints. And, you know, the first real battle was the Battle of Bull Run outside of Washington, D.C. in the summer of 1861. And the Union troops got whooped pretty bad by the Confederates. And that was the first indication that this wasn't going to be easy. So then that summer, Lincoln makes a call for, I think, 500,000 volunteers. Mm-hmm. And the first real indication that this was going to be just a long, bloody, awful war was earlier in 1862 at the Battle of Shiloh in Tennessee, where there were over 20,000 casualties on both sides. A couple of reasons why this was going to be so bloody was they were still using tactics, you know, dating back to the Revolution, where all these guys would line up and fire at each other from, you know, 50 yards away using these muskets. And they had to get that close because those muskets, those smoothbore muskets, were so inaccurate. Well, by 1861, a new kind of bullet had been invented by a French army officer named Mini, and these bullets became known as mini balls, and they were grooved rounds and designed to be fired from a grooved rifle, which made the round more accurate, more powerful, could go farther. And most of the casualties in the Civil War were caused by these mini balls, these mm-hmm. bullets, which if they hit somebody in the body, they could go entirely through the body. But if they hit bone, they were going to shatter the bone. And back then, there was no way to repair that. And so, that's why you had so many amputations during the Civil War. So early on, this started getting real bloody. And it got even bloodier later in 1862 in September at the Battle of Antietam in Sharpsburg, Maryland, which the 77th was part of.
So, but what was that the battle that you described early on in the war, they had the most casualties?
Battle of Shiloh in Tennessee.
Right.
And that was a two-day battle. And there were a couple of Union officers in charge of the Union troops back then, who we're going to hear about later in the Civil War. One guy, William Tecumseh Sherman. Another guy, Ulysses S. Grant, a couple of Midwesterners who would go on to later in the war lead the Union armies. As I mentioned, Shiloh was a two-day battle. Antietam in Sharpsburg, Maryland, fought on September 17th, was the single bloodiest day in American history. 23,000 casualties on both sides, killed, wounded, missing. And that was reinforced the thought that, yeah, this is going to be a bloody slog until the very end. And in 1862, there was no end in sight. And as we know now, that war would last another, almost full 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And the 77th sustained its share of casualties in each of these battles.
Well, yeah, in 1862, they saw their first actions in Virginia and suffered several casualties. But it wasn't until Antietam that they really started losing men, and they lost over 30 at Antietam. After that, they headed back to Virginia, were in some actions, and really got in. The war was going on, then you're into 1863, and Lee again invades the North, and the two armies clash at Gettysburg. The 77th was at Gettysburg, but they weren't in the direct fighting. They were assigned to an artillery battery to guard them. And while they didn't suffer any casualties, in Gettysburg, you could be a mile away from where the battle was and still get hit by something, a stray bullet, a cannonball come bouncing through your bivouac, or a stray artillery shell. And that three-day battle resulted I believe it was over 50,000 casualties on both sides. So the 77th didn't lose any men at Gettysburg, but they were there, and there is a monument to the 77th on the Gettysburg battlefield.
And then eventually, on the Union side, Ulysses Grant becomes the commander-in-chief, and he's much more aggressive than previous commanders on the Union side.
Right, and March of 1864, President Lincoln brings Grant east, names him commander of all Union forces fighting in the war, and Grant comes with a new attitude. His predecessors, the Union commanders, every time they fought a battle, even if they won it, they'd fall back. They'd fall back and regroup and resupply and wait for reinforcements. Even at that time, they were told that, Lee had so many more soldiers, when in fact he didn't. So when Grant came east, he said, no more of that. We're going to attack, and we're going to advance, and we're going to attack again. And starting in May of 1864, he started his campaign in Virginia, and his goal was basically to just beat Lee's army. And as bloody as 1863 was with Shiloh and Antietam, 1864 would wind up being the bloodiest year of the Civil War, because Grant had decided, we are going to finish this war quicker if we take on and destroy Lee's army. So that fighting that started in May of 1864 included the Battle of the Wilderness. The 77th was there, followed by what's known as the Battle of Spotsylvania Courthouse, where the 77th was in the thick of it. They lost dozens of guys there, wounded, killed, missing, and that would wind up being the bloodiest stretch for the 77th during the Civil War.
What did these soldiers, of course, they're soldiers that had to follow orders, what did the soldiers think of Grant?
For the most part, they liked him. He wanted to win the war. He was aggressive, and the soldiers liked that, because they did not. They didn't like getting beat by Robert E. Lee and then falling back, even when they had a good chance of following up an attack and maybe gaining the upper hand. And that took a toll on the morale, starting with commanders like McClellan and then a guy named Pope and then a guy named Meade. They just wouldn't, mm-hmm. They didn't have that aggressive streak that Grant had. And his attitude was picked up by the Union soldiers. They're like, yeah, let's get at these at these rebels and beat them and finish this war. So Grant really turned that army around in the east. And he's just, you know, just a, as we know, a towering figure from that war, and probably one of the top three or four people who resulted in the Union victory, having an influence over that outcome.
Of course, we're kind of worrying, or we're having, it seems like, very stressed out elections coming up, you know, on the national scene in America. But toward the end of the Civil War, there was an election of, you know, election for president.
Yes, in 1864, and things were looking bleak, even with Grant coming east and you know, and having some success against Lee. But still, the war was still going on, and it would look like, you know, Lincoln was going to lose. Well, something else that was going on in 1864 down south was William Tecumseh Sherman was having victories in what was known as the Western Theater, which was like Kentucky and Tennessee, and he had taken Nashville, and then he marched his army south and took Atlanta in 1864, and then he says, I'm going to march to the sea, and I'm going to march to the coast and with his army, and he basically proceeded to pretty much just gut the Confederacy, because Georgia was home to a lot of industries supplying the Confederate Army. It was kind of their breadbasket. Their farms produced a lot of food. And Sherman's army just proceeded to destroy a lot of railroads, destroy factories, foundries, any kind of, you know, plantations that supplied food to the Confederacy. So, and he eventually, in the fall of 1864, you know, made it to the coast. And that sort of turned things around for Lincoln. And he wound up winning that election in 1864. And a lot of it was because the Union soldiers voted for him. Kind of turned things around, that, you know, what was happening up in Virginia with Grant and down south with Sherman.
The 77th from Saratoga, New York, are kind of close to the end of the war. I mean, or they were stationed near where the surrender of Lee's army took place.
Right. Earlier, also in 1864, Grant laid siege to Petersburg, Virginia, which was a few miles south of Richmond. It was kind of blocking the way. So Union forces besieged Richmond, including the 77th. They were part of the units conducting the siege. And the siege basically was a precursor of what we would see 50 years later on the Western Front in Europe during World War I. The Union Army built all these lines and trenches all around Petersburg, and they would they set up artillery positions and mortars, lobbing bombs into Petersburg against the Confederate positions. And this went on for over 200 days. And at one point, the 77th was sent back up to Washington, D.C. It was a Confederate raid against the District of Columbia, so the 77th was involved with that, and then sent back to Petersburg, where they lost a couple of guys towards the end of the siege. And then the Union Army eventually got captured Petersburg, and Lee's army escaped to the west and wound up at a place called Appomattox Courthouse in Virginia, a small hamlet. And the 77th was there. The Union Army had Lee's army surrounded. Lee was down to about 20,000 men. They were battered and tattered and starving. And the 77th was nearby when Lee surrendered to General Grant on April 9th, 1865.
And what happened to the 77th then? I mean, they went home, one presumes, or those who that remained.
They were eventually sent north. They started going north. They made it to Richmond, and then they were sent to Washington. The Union Army by this point is drawing down. The surrenders of all the Confederate forces is going on. The Union Army, the 77th is in Washington, D.C. in late June 1865 when it's mustered out. Its time in service is all done. So these guys packed up and headed north, headed back to Saratoga County and Fulton County and Essex County.
We don't think so much about the stress of soldiers in older wars. You know, it's become such an important topic of discussion, for example, with soldiers who served in Afghanistan or Iraq, Vietnam, and even World War II, but there must have been a lot of problems, as they say.
Oh, yeah, we know now that these soldiers, like a lot of combat soldiers, suffered from PTSD and post-traumatic issues, because you can look back at accounts and letters and stories about some of these guys that came home, and some of them had drinking problems, known to have nightmares. It was, no different from World War One or World War Two or the wars before. A lot of guys came home with injuries that would, missing limbs. A lot of them suffered illnesses during their campaigns that stayed with them for years or sent them to early graves. One fact from the Civil War, for every guy that was killed in combat or died of wounds, suffered in battle, two soldiers died from disease or illnesses. The diseases such as dysentery and typhoid and typhus, malaria, especially the guys that were campaigning in Virginia. Virginia's got a lot of swamps and marshes and lots of mosquitoes that carry malaria. So malaria laid a lot of guys low, and even something like measles could lead to pneumonia, which, pneumonia back then was a killer. So a lot of these guys suffered injuries, and mentally and physically, that remained with them for the rest of their lives.
Chris Carolla joins us. We're talking about the 77th New York Regiment in the Civil War. Let me go to the post-war era, and maybe we'll revisit some things in the war itself. But after the war, there's an effort to make a monument to the soldiers of the 77th, and that really has its own history. What happened there?
Well, yeah, after the war in 1866, veterans all across the Union States started forming a group known as the Grand Army of the Republic, and each state had chapters in their towns and villages and cities, and they were known as the GAR. And at one point, at its height, there were hundreds of thousands of members of the GAR. And these were Civil War veterans from the Union states. New York State itself had over 600 chapters. So these guys formed, and this was before there was a American Legion or VFW. And the goal of the GAR was to, memorialize the sacrifices of the Union soldiers and sailors, and to advocate for veterans' pensions. They raised money to help out veterans who'd fallen on hard times, or raised money to help out the widows and orphans of the fallen comrades.
You're listening to the Historians Podcast. I'm Bob Cudmore. You can support the podcast by sending a donation to our GoFundMe campaign. You can see the blue button on our home page, bobcudmore.com. Press the button, takes you to the GoFundMe website, and you can donate that way. Or you can write a check out to me, Bob Cudmore, and send to 125 Horstman Drive, Scotia, New York, 12302. Well, Chris Carolla, thanks very much for joining us, talking about your research on the 77th New York Regiment in the Civil War.
Thank you, Bob. I really enjoyed it.
The Historians Podcast is produced by Dave Green. I'm Bob Cudmore.